You're listening to MoneyWeb at Midday.
Now we're going to continue this special extended edition of MoneyWeb at Midday with a focus now on the beer industry in South Africa. I don't need to tell you, it is a vital part of our economy. It contributes billions in taxes and also supports thousands, tens of thousands of jobs in the country and also drives growth in related sectors. But with excise taxes rising faster than inflation, here's a key question. Could we be pushing legal alcohol out of the reach of consumers and possibly fueling the illicit trade? How do these tax policies impact small businesses like restaurants, taverns, and the broader liquor supply chain? And what role does government have to play in balancing public health revenue generation and economic sustainability? And I think this discussion is very apt given that we are just a couple of days away from Budget 2025. I have three expert guests with me today. Nadira Grimsel-Gradwell, SAB's Regulatory and Public Policy Director, along with Wendy Alberts, Chief Executive Officer of the Restaurant Association of South Africa. It's the voice of restaurants in the country, along with Lucky Ntimani, who is convener of the National Liquor Traders Council. To all three of you, a very warm welcome. Nadira, let me start with you and put to you that government often justifies tax increases, and we will inevitably hear about this come Budget Day Wednesday, as necessary for revenue. The reality, though, is that it's never going to go away. What is SAB or AB InBev's position on that?
Well, I think, Jeremy, it's very important to understand actually how these taxes are calculated from a national treasury perspective. So according to national treasury, taxes on beer, which I can speak on, should be about 23% of the average retail selling price. But what we found is that in the last 6 years, it's actually gone way above that. And that's all as a result of above inflation increases on excise adjustments yearly. So currently what consumers are paying is around 38% in tax on a bottle of beer, and excise of that makes up about 25%.
And when you raise this with government, what do they tell you?
Well, we have been raising this with government for a number of years. We do understand that government is in a tough spot. We do understand that revenue raising is very, very important. But with our macroeconomic environment now, where we have a shrinking tax base, we do understand that excise taxes have a role to play. But however, in order to make sure that these excise tax contributions are continuous and sustainable, government needs to ensure that it's adjusted by CPI inflation and it doesn't go beyond that. Otherwise, there will be diminishing fiscal returns.
And Lucky Ntimani from the National Liquor Traders Council, this has a trickle-down effect, I imagine, on the value chain. So these excise tax hikes, as Nadira points out, that have been increasing beyond the rate of inflation, will impact liquor traders, and particularly within your constituency in the townships. How are they feeling it?
Certainly, you have summed it up very nicely. It's a very difficult one for us because if you look at a tavern environment, it's a sustenance type of a business. It's hand to mouth. And if you look at the entry level products such as beer, which brings fit into our businesses, I mean, these increases that seem to affect that space really has an impact in a way that people now are no longer considering those products that used to think they are entry level at our establishments. They're now moving into these ready mixes that are often illicit and counterfeit. And we've seen that, even the spirits that we sell that were biggest contributor to our bottom line, also, people are no longer going into that space because given that we have about 20 billion rand worth of illicit and counterfeit, that has now found space and appreciation within our consumer target market. And those people are now moving away from actually coming to our legal establishments and moving into the illicit and counterfeit alcohol. Now, our biggest worry is that come Wednesday, when the Minister of Finance makes announcements and then the budget with regards to excise is beyond the inflation, it means that we are now also creating a monster that is illicit and counterfeit. But also we have another problem that we are facing, which is the National Treasury proposals with regards to excise and a whole lot of other baskets of goods that they want to tax. This is going to create a challenge because what it means is that we are now offering a legal environment, which is something that our customers or consumers cannot afford. So we now have a real estate where we're selling legal products, but won't have anyone coming through the doors because they can get these products elsewhere for cheaper, albeit not healthy products or health products that are approved by government to sell at a legal environment.
Lucky Ntumane, you use the word monster. I would also suggest to you that it creates a health hazard with potential tragic consequences. So when you raise an issue like this with government, the same question that I've just put to Nadira from SAB, what do they tell you? Is there sympathy? Do they feel that there is room to compromise on this? Or what is the position?
Maybe my colleague here at SAB has been fortunate to engage with government for the past 4 years or so. We have tried to engage with government.
And what do they tell you? What do they tell you?
We've never had a chance to talk to them. It's almost like they're knocking at a non-existent door. So no one talks to us.
So, Wendy Alberts from the Restaurant Association, I see you nodding there. I don't know whether you're nodding in sympathy or in agreement or both, particularly when it comes to the outreach to government. So, rising excise taxes as far as restaurants are concerned within your constituency, it's obviously going to impact on their ability to sell alcohol profitably, the same situation that Lucky Ntumane finds himself in.
Absolutely, Jeremy. You know, we've been having these conversations for a very long time. And we feel that the opinion of the restaurant industry is always muted when it comes to policies that are written for government. And if we look at the way that a restaurant is structured, we're a small business and we have a massive amount of costs and overheads that we need to take into consideration. And when we look at increases in taxes and we look at increases all around, we have to consider that none of these are done at the same time. So there is a business model that a restaurant is built on, and we call it a best operating practice. There are certain percentages that we make available for your cost of sales, your profitability matrices, administration, labor, utilities, etc. And when we start breaking these down into percentages, there's so much, only so little left at the bottom to be able to make it profitable for that business to be sustainable. And not all of these taxes and the increase in taxes come to us at an available time. So we always land up running at deficits. And if we think about all the taxes and the increases in our fees that we have to pay, we're talking from SAMRO, SAMPRA, SABC, TB licenses. We're talking about our costs from the suppliers. We're talking about food increases. We talk about petrol. We talk about electricity. We talk about the rates and taxes. And none of these are all simultaneously. So they don't come as a consolidated cost. And we say, in our industry, the total cost is going to be 6% on all of these. Some of these increases are 18, 23, 45%. So it makes it very difficult to be able to manage these businesses. And if there isn't enough margin to be able to outline where we find the turnover to support the cost, we end up losing a lot of restaurants.
And is this problem uniform across the industry, or would it have would it be easier, for instance, for the bigger restaurant or maybe even the franchise groups to absorb some of that cost more easily than maybe smaller independent operators?
So not necessarily. No, the industry is made up of a large variety of different types of restaurants. We have from your top-end restaurants, your fine dining, we have some of your really popular restaurants, and then we have the middle restaurants, which is really available for communities and for families, and suburban restaurants. We've got our dorpies and our outlying, and then we obviously have a large portion of franchises. They have a complete different model because also within their margins there's also franchise fees and advertising fees, as well as other compounded fees for mandatory products that need to be taken into consideration. So there is another 15 to 17% of added costs that would need to be drawn from their profitability matrix. So what we do find is we also have the landlords, which are a big challenge to us. I mean, that lease turns on the year and there are increases that are far above inflation. And many of the costs that we have to afford to pay for all these increases are well above inflation. So when we bring a thing like excise tax in, it is critical to us because, one, where has a consultation been with government? Where they sat around a table and said, what will the financial impact be by pushing up these margins far greater than that of inflation? When we look at the percentage of how our business models are structured, we need government to have a conversation with us to unpack the statistical data that we can say if we increase it, and beer is 50% of our turnover in the beverage to 70% of our profitability of how we actually find affordability to pay the balance of our expenses, they would be more sensitive to understanding how much they can push to have these excise taxes or any other taxes or landlord costs to us.
And Nadira, back to you. Listening to what Wendy Albert says from the Restaurant Association, I'm assuming that there is a negative or reverse impact on the supply chain, because if the restaurant at this end of the studio here is facing the kind of pressure that Wendy's pointing out, it will have an impact on orders. That then has a domino effect on jobs and the resultant impact on people who are supplying your company. So it's a very difficult situation, isn't it?
It's completely tough, right? I mean, it's a tough macroeconomic environment for everyone. Consumers are under pressure and businesses are under pressure from the likes of SAB. I mean, in the last 6 years, we've had electricity costs that have skyrocketed by about more than 90%. The cost of raw material inputs have got up by about 45%. So if you look at both the upstream costs and the downstream costs, government really needs to take into consideration how these costs are managed by both restaurants and legal manufacturers. And I think what National Treasury needs to be concerned about is how do you protect the legal tax base. I mean, Wendy and Lucky spoke to affordability. And in a study that was done in 2020, it was found that about legal alcohol is 43% more expensive than the illicit products. So if you look at that affordability, Treasury needs to have a balancing game between actually protecting their legal tax base, but also making sure that I think like you said, the stat was around 20 billion lost in excise taxes due to illicit trade. So everyone is under pressure, Jeremy, and what we're asking for is policies from National Treasury and government that allow certainty and predictability, not only for restaurants, but for beer producers alike.
Well, let's talk in a moment about what certain and predictable policy actually means. But Nadira, very quickly, maybe some, and by the way, Lucky, I want to come back to the illicit industry as well and how it works. But just give me a sense, Nadira, if you can, about the importance of the beer industry to the South African economy. So effectively, contribution to GDP and employment. And that will give us an indication of just how critical this particular issue is that we're discussing.
Sure. So there was a study that was released about 2 weeks ago, and it really affirmed what we knew about the beer economy. So the beer economy contributes around 96% towards South Africa's GDP. It supports around 210,000 jobs. And as of 2023...
96%?
Excuse me, Jeremy? 96 billion,
yes,
pardon
okay.
me.
96% billion. Nadira, that's a lot of beer, man.
It's a lot of beer and a lot of numbers, right?
Very happy to participate, but that's a lot of beer, yeah. 9.6%, yeah.
Yeah, but I think, most importantly, to government revenue, that's about 4.2% simply from the beer industry. So government really needs to understand that that the beer economy is an economic contributor, and having policies in place to protect that is important.
Like Intermani, let's get back to this illegal industry if we can. You've said that it moves in, it fills the gap. How sophisticated is this industry, and what kind of product is being supplied?
So it is quite sophisticated, but because what we've picked up is, and we work very closely with the Consumer Goods Council of South Africa, under which the issues of illicit and counterfeit sits. And we've picked up that these guys operate in such a way that they have built manufacturing plant that can rival those of legal manufacturers. In some instances, they make products that even the original makers of these products can't even tell the difference. That's how sophisticated these guys are. But also what they've done, and they were enabled to do this through the bans that were to enjoy during COVID, in such a way that they've now created route to markets. So when they produce something, they know where it's going. And if you look at our total base of taverns in the country, we're looking at about 43,000 taverns. And not all those taverns buy directly from manufacturers like SAB or Heineken. Mm. So a bigger chunk of that will buy from your distributors, like your Macro, your Ultra Liquors. But that creates an opportunity then for these guys to move in and close that gap for refilling some of the products that they might not want to refill from the reputable distributors. So that's where the gap comes from. I mean, we had an incident in Katlehong, I believe, where they found a guy with 4 million worth of stock and he knew where that stock was going. And in the midst of the arrest, he was still getting orders from these liquor traders, combination of taverns and shebeens, as we know that shebeens are illegal. So these guys, they have a database, they have a customer list, they know where the product that they're going to produce is going to. That is a big worry, because now you're having an illegal establishment operating as a legal entity, because these guys now even have sales teams that go about looking for business for these illegal and counterfeit manufacturers.
They have their own sales teams.
Yes.
That's how sophisticated it's become.
Yes.
That's quite astonishing. I want to talk to you in just a moment about the kind of policy certainty that Nadira was talking about, which needs to exist. But before that, Wendy Alberts, back to you. Maybe just give us a sense of how the cost of legal alcohol affects menu pricing and overall restaurant sales. What are the numbers here? What does the economy tell you?
Look, I mean, obviously the restaurants need to balance between maintaining profitability and keeping prices attractive to customers. And that is crucial what we need to do in restaurants. And what we're finding is that there are a lot of home-based restaurants opening, or entertainment centers opening, or home-based entertainment. So it's really just closing down that lower-end gap of the restaurant market. So the richer restaurants become richer, and the lower-end restaurants who really rely. Because remember, beer is an entry-level element into our restaurants, and we can work on a 70-30% split, which means 70% alcohol, 30% food consumption, and in order to maintain those figures to be able to keep that business open and to make it affordable, we need to measure up that there is profitability matrices in this space, and the pricing needs to be attractive to customers. So the minute we start talking about that bottom level is where we are going to lose a lot of the restaurants, and people are going to shift to entertaining at home or go and drink in places that are off the grid or off the market, where they should not be drinking. So as much as that there are...
As Lucky was referring to
exactly.
as well, yeah,
the
underground of the pirate industry. Yeah.
Correct. And the restaurant industry moved to illicit trade, but we will move into different spaces where people can still be entertained in an informal environment where there is diminished employment, where there isn't regulation, where we talk about public health, we talk about health elements, as well as any other type of threats that happens to our industry. What I do know is we contributed in around 2020, $141.5 billion to the GDP. And if we look at the amount of those restaurants post-recovery from COVID and that what the pandemic did to us, it's taken us a long time to recover. And we are still in a space where we're really trying to endure this pressure and the constant pressure of all these increases, especially things like electricity is a huge impact, the labor costs, the minimum wage. Landlords, they put tremendous amount of pressure on us, and then still to expect the consumer to absorb further costs just means we put more pressure on them on menu prices, which means people are not going to support our restaurants, and we're going to land up with a further unemployment on the balance sheets.
And again, back to Nadira's point about policy certainty, that situation is just going to continue in a downward spiral, and the kind of shift in consumer behavior that you pointed out to us is simply going to continue. The result is more closure. And we're seeing that already, Wendy Alberts, aren't we?
Correct. You know, policies that promote fair competition and reduce operational burdens help. It helps to keep businesses consistent, and we're not seeing that at the moment. And we also need to move into a more mature relationship with government. You know, we sit on the back end, and we've really come from COVID to where we are now, and all these price increases really heavily impact us, and so many restaurants are closing where it's not needed. You know, restaurant closes to reopen that restaurant costs a ton of money, and also the time to get the necessary licenses, liquor licenses, take forever. So those restaurants again then close before the business matrix can actually kick in. And we need to be a lot more forward thinking. We need to have consultation. We're small businesses that really contribute massively to the GDP and also to employment. I think we sit on around about 250,000 people. And that doesn't even talk about the extended value chain of small businesses like our electricians or our painters or the maintenance people or us or small suppliers or independent businesses who are also part of this value chain. And I think if we could really have these conversations and consultation with government to draw the statistical information of the impact, if they did take the tax into consideration, yet we lost the base of restaurants, would that tax be beneficial to the economy, or losing the bottom base of the number of restaurants as well as employment, would that be of a greater or lesser impact to the economy?
You're listening to a special extended edition of MoneyWeb at midday today. We are looking at the beer industry in South Africa, a vital part of our economy. But as we've referred to a little earlier, with excise taxes rising faster than inflation, are we pushing legal alcohol out of the reach of consumers? I have three guests with me today. Nadira Crimsel-Gradwell, SAB's Regulatory and Public Policy Director. Wendy Alberts, you've just heard her voice, Chief Executive Officer of the Restaurant Association of South Africa. Lucky Ntamani is also with us, convener of the National Liquor Traders Council. So let's look at some solutions now. Nadira, back to you. You talk about the necessity for certainty when it comes and sustainability when it comes to policy. What kind of support then or policy change do you need to see to help, I guess, restaurants thrive, but your own business as well, I guess?
Yeah, so when it comes to excise taxes, like that we're talking about now, they need to be fair, they need to be predictable, it needs to provide some level of certainty. If I can use an example, Jeremy, I'm sure in your household, like you said, a budget, right? To allow you to plan.
Mrs. Max does.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. But it's exactly like the same thing with the business, right? We need to understand what our policy is going to do. Are excise taxes predictable? And in that way, we can make sure that we can effectively plan for our business. It will lead to like investor confidence, and it will also allow the beer economy to continue its contribution that it has been making. So there's one simple ask for National Treasury. Just align your excise adjustments in line with like projected inflation. And I think more so to that, we do believe that this should be enshrined like within legislation.
So is that the call then, that it's got to be aligned to inflation? You would be happy with that, given that inflation itself is also fluctuating?
Yeah, I mean, there's two ways like to go about it, right? Mm. There can be your actual inflation, there can be your expected inflation, but with the way National Treasury has like proposed this, is we actually need to plan for the future. Therefore, if we use the projected inflation model, it will allow us that ability to plan for the future and also look at the macroeconomic outlook that Treasury itself has set. We can look at international examples, like for the likes of Canada, they actually automatically index the excise adjustments to inflation. You have the likes of Tanzania, that's closer to home, and that's actually, it's a very interesting example, because they adjust their excise adjustments according to the macroeconomic environment. So what we have found in the last couple of years is that in Tanzania, they either leave the excise adjustments untouched, or in cases of where it's a downturn in the macroeconomic outlook, they actually adjust it way below inflation. And they actually do give preferential treatment for products that are produced locally using local raw materials and ingredients.
So, Lucky Ntamani, you've said that you've been knocking at government's door, but no one's answered. If you were to enter into that policy debate, again, looking to stop consumers moving towards drinking illicit alcohol, for instance, which, as you've pointed out, is a huge problem, what kind of policy change or direction would you like to see?
I think, I mean, to support what Nadira said, is to have certainty with regards to the excise duty. If you look at the National Treasury proposals that they sent out, for example, if they succeed, they'll only collect about 4.6 billion rand, and the net loss to the economy will be about 6.7 billion rand. So, their net benefit will be around 2.3 billion, which represents about 0.2% of the tax that government collects per year. So you want to disturb and disrupt the economy just for a mere 0.2%. We don't think that's a wise decision. But also, I think we need to look holistically at the contribution of taverns in the South African economy, not just the township economy. We have about 43,000 taverns and a minimum of about 250,000 workers, with livelihoods supported of close to 1 million. And it's difficult in South Africa to find a job, and it's difficult to even be an entrepreneur. Now that we have these entrepreneurs that are trying to support their families, the least that government can do is to create policies that support their businesses, and not just to come up with proposals and ideas that actually are going to destroy their businesses. But we ask a question, why doesn't government want to engage with us? It is actually even very strange that the National Treasury will actually put out a proposal aimed at curbing alcohol abuse, when it's actually contrary to what the Constitution says about their mandate, if you look at Section 216, if I'm not mistaken, of the Constitution. So it seems like even government is not coherent in how they communicate with regards to talking to the alcohol industry. So we really call on government to level with us and engage with us so that we can find solutions. We all want solutions and we all want things that work for our country. We are not just wanting to operate in silo, but we also want to contribute to the betterment of our society and communities at large.
You're an easy target of that, there is no doubt. Do you feel unfairly victimized by government in that respect?
Yeah, we do feel victimized. At some point, we were even worried that we're going to be blamed for load shedding. As things stand now, you know, wanting to tax us out of business is more...
You're not responsible for the rain outside.
No, definitely not. Wanting to tax us to our death is akin to milking a dying cow, because there's really nothing to get out of us. All that we need government to do is to support our businesses so that we can grow and employ more people in the informal space.
So, Wendy Alberts, regulatory changes then are obviously needed, perhaps a more temperate and perhaps a more benign approach from government would also be useful. What kind of changes would you like to see that will enable restaurants to remain open, one, and I guess more competitive as well, given, again, as you've mentioned to us a little earlier, the jobs that are created and the importance that the industry is to the broader economy?
I have to agree that the predictable trajectory regime is definitely what we need to have on an upscale. The more balanced and more predictable it is, it would benefit the industry. It would certainly provide more stability and allow business to plan their investments and operate more effectively. It's very important that we are able to support our business matrix and to look at the best operating practices for the biggest degree of success. I think what we have seen in the last few years is that when it's unpredictable, closure of restaurants are really on the high. And we can't have this link just because there are rising costs that can be controlled or that can be consulted on. These are definitely directly linked to the rising costs in the hospitality sector, and many, many restaurants have been unable to sustain these operations due to the increased expenses and year-on-year the reduced profitability that we certainly face. All I can hope for is that the message to policymakers can be to really reinstate that the relationship between alcohol and taxation and businesses remains critical to us. Our menu prices need to be balanced, that the consumer will enjoy coming to eat out, that they find the homes that we've created for them to become and enjoy a meal and alcohol would be able to have a positive impact in keeping that business sustainable and keeping it open. I find that the hospitality industry is always the one that's targeted most when it comes to policy changes and there's never consultation. But yet we're one of the largest contributors to the GDP, to employment, and to creating spaces for businesses to open for entrepreneurial development and also for jobs to be created. And we need government to respect our industry, that we are a thriving industry and that we have the opportunity to create and promote more jobs and to promote more businesses that are favourable to the bottom line of the economy. But right now we really sit again with far more challenges. Mm. We again pleading again, putting it back onto the consumer. The consumer is very fractured at the moment. The economy is unbalanced. It's unpredictable. People are just trying to recover. Interest rates have dropped slightly, and then we have an increase. So the little bit that we save, we just take on the other hand. And I think we need to work towards a more mindful, more consolidated way together as all of us to see what works best for our country. We need to have these conversations with the Treasurer. We need to have conversations and relationships that are respectable, that they can consult with us. And we're not saying we're not completely against this. We say, let's just be fair. Give us a predictability. I agree with Nadira for it to be based on inflation. And as far as all the increased costs go, we can't continue to survive businesses in South Africa where there are these unpredictable, extreme increases in many expenses that just completely violate the ability for us as entrepreneurs to not be able to keep our doors open and for so many more businesses to close. We've come a long way to support government. We've come a long way to support livelihoods, to keep people employed. And we need to now protect our investment and to protect the economy in South Africa by maintaining a degree of professionalism throughout our sector, by keeping these businesses open.
So that's a very forthright and blunt assessment. Wendy Alberts, I'm also going to use that as your closing statement. Nadira, I'll return to you now. What can beer producers do, or what are beer producers doing to work closer with policymakers on that fairer tax framework, given that if the status quo remains, the sense I'm getting is that it's just going to become a whole lot more difficult? You've obviously got a plan in place.
Yes. So, I mean, I think we've been very fortunate to engage with policymakers and to engage with Treasury. I think what we're simply asking for is more engagement, more robust conversations. And Wendy made an interesting point around policy measures. And policy measures should be accompanied by socioeconomic impact assessments, right? So even with like the policy review that's coming up, I think that Lucky has alluded to, we do ask government to be very cognizant of the unintended consequences of some of the policies. But for us, our call is simply continue to engage with us. We will follow all of the parliamentary processes, etc. But when we do come knock, please answer our call, and please do continue the open doors of engagement with us.
And Lucky and Tamani, I'll give you the final word. I'm assuming that your message would be very similar. You'd just like someone to return your call or reply to an email.
Yes, no, certainly. But also, I think it's important for us to mention that we remain open to working with our government. We support our government's direction in terms of the economic growth. And we want to play a part in that. And for us to play a part in that is for our business to be protected. And for our business to be protected is that we need a predictable regime that will ensure that we're able to plan accordingly so that we can run successful and sustainable businesses to support our families.
As you said a little earlier at the start of this conversation, often an unreported issue, and I hope that we've shed a little bit more light on it. So, Lucky and Tamani, thank you very much indeed. Convener of the National Liquor Traders Council, along with Wendy Alberts, Chief Executive Officer of the Restaurant Association of South Africa, and Nadira Grumsel-Gradwell, South African Breweries Regulatory and Public Policy Director. To all three of you, thank you very much for joining us for a very insightful conversation. That is also our program for today. We are back tomorrow with another 30 minutes looking at issues driving South Africa's business, political, and social environment. Thank you for listening, and goodbye.